Hello, and welcome to our program, Seniorific News, December issue, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Patty Martin, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from Seniorific News here on OWL Radio. Our first article is titled Ways to Recover from a Financial Shock by Kimberly Palmer of Nerd Wallet. Financial shocks come in many different forms. An unexpected medical bill, house repair, or job loss are among the typical ones. The reasons for financial shocks may be common, but recovering from them can be unexpectedly challenging. These things happen once or twice over a financial lifetime, says Spencer Betts, a certified financial planner. To recover from a financial shock and to protect yourself from the impact of one before it happens, consider these guideposts from financial experts. First, turn to your emergency fund or start one. Betts recommends using an emergency fund as a first line of defense against financial shocks. The general guideline is to have 3 to 6 months of your expenses set aside, adding that the money can be kept in an interest-bearing account so it continues to grow. Betts also says, if you don't yet have an emergency fund, then experiencing a financial shock can provide the motivation to start one as soon as you're able to do so. Barbara O'Neill says you can get a taste of success now that so much has beat you down. You want to turn things around. Starting by saving small amounts at a time can help, O'Neill stated. Tailor your savings to type of emergency. This is from Mary Carlson. She says she encourages clients to separate emergency savings accounts into two categories. One, a catastrophic emergency fund for major events such as job loss and death, and a life happens fund for things like house repairs and a larger-than-life tax bill. When we start to label things what they really are, then we know what to use the money for, Carlson says. Otherwise, she adds, it would be easy to empty out your emergency fund for predictable expenses like car maintenance. Another tip, cut back on unnecessary expenses. Immediately scaling back spending on variable costs, such as restaurant meals and retail purchases, can help direct funds to recovering from the financial shock. You can't change rent easily, but you can adjust how much you spend on going out to eat, travel, entertainment, and clothes, Betts says. If you can't pay for everything, you've got to cover the basic needs first: food, shelter, utilities. Then the things that will bring consequences, like your car being repossessed, O'Neill says. If you are struggling with those basics and looking for local resources to help, such as food banks, the website 211.org can help you find them. Ask about hardship options. If it's still tough to pay your bills, Betts recommends calling your lender or service provider. You aren't going to be the first person to say, oh no, I have overextended myself. Can you do anything to help me with these payment options? He says. Companies can sometimes offer payment plans or later due dates for bills. Carlson says that in some cases, banks and credit unions will work with customers on short-term loans with a 0% or low interest rate to help them get through a challenging period or unexpected expense. Be proactive and say, look, I can't make this work. They may have options for you to work out a plan, she says. Create a timeline and find support. Giving yourself a deadline to get through your financial shock, whether it's paying off a specific expense or finding a new job, can also make it easier to power through a difficult period, Beth says. If you have a precise timeline, whether it's 70 weeks or 13 months, then you can say, okay, I'm counting down the months, the weeks, the days. This isn't something I have to do forever, but for a short period of time, and then I'll be done with it, he says. Sharing that goal with friends and family members can open new avenues of support as you try to reduce spending during that period, he adds. If you're talking to someone you are comfortable with or who might also be going through a crisis, you can go through it together, and it's easier, states Betts. And then our last tip, don't forget mental recovery. Research shows that financial recovery takes time and support, both emotionally and financially. In his collaborative research on the psychological effects of life shocks on financial well-being, Jesse B. Jurgensen, assistant professor in the School of Financial Planning at Texas Tech, has found that stress can influence how we feel about our financial well-being as much as objective measures like the size of our savings account. It may be helpful to focus on the mental health side and remind people going through a financial shock that things are going to get better, he says. This is just a temporary hiccup. And then our next article, How to Adjust to Prosperity After Sparsity. This is by Chanel Bassette of NerdWallet. Growing up without money affects how you live on a daily basis in childhood, and it can have long-term effects into adulthood, even when you begin to have enough money to make ends meet. When you move from experiencing sparsity to maintaining financial stability, there can be some major opportunities to set yourself and your family up for long-term security. But there can also be challenges around changing your mindset and managing your emotions about money. Here are some things to expect when you move from one circumstance to another. When money is tight on a continual basis, hard decisions often have to be made, such as, am I going to pay my light bill or am I going to buy groceries? There's no right answer, and either way, there's going to be a lack of safety, says Sandra Davis, a money coach. Davis says that lack of safety, in other words, not being able to fulfill all of your needs and living in fear that you'll lose your income, benefits, or housing, can create what is widely termed as financial trauma, which is when an experience with money or a message passed down from a previous generation causes us to behave in response to the trauma rather than with thoughtful consideration. Family relationships are typically an influential factor in your money habits, and they can also be a major consideration once your financial situation improves. Davis says that thought patterns about money can come from lived experience, but they also come from information passed down through family members. Systemic obstacles can also be a consideration, such as how public benefits might be cut off once you reach a certain income level, even if you still need financial assistance to pay for food or housing. Assuming you've been able to overcome these challenges, there can be mental hurdles to get over once you're in a more financially abundant situation. But there are steps you can take to get on track toward achieving your financial goals. Venicia Robinson, a therapist and life coach, has personal experience in shifting her money mindset. She grew up in a household that faced financial challenges, and she also became a mother at a young age. She recalls paying certain bills only after she had received a service shutoff notice. Once she started school to become an accountant, she decided that she wanted to change these habits and parent her children to understand credit, saving money, and how to manage their spending habits. One of the early steps she took toward financial stability was to start keeping tabs on how much she was spending, which she recommends to anyone who's working to improve their financial situation. After she had a handle on her income and expenses, she was able to prioritize the financial goals she had created for herself and come up with a spending plan. For her, that looked like paying her bills first, then allocating the remaining money this way, setting aside money for discretionary spending, saving some money for a rainy day fund, and investing a percentage towards her future. If you aren't sure where to start, in addition to tracking your spending, reach out to a fiduciary financial planner, ideally before your money comes in. Fiduciary financial planners have a legal duty to act in your best interest, which means they don't push you to buy a financial product or service. These financial planners can be found within an online search or through referrals in your community. You can also reach out to a financial therapist when thoughts about money are getting in the way of decision making or if you're feeling stressed about money. Davis also suggests that people increase their knowledge by reading financial resources and thinking about their emotions around money. Financial education can be found in many sources, including books, classes, and online. If a family is a concern, a meeting can be a helpful step to set expectations around money and to discuss how the whole family could benefit from a financial shift. This might entail discussions around how money can be used to provide long-term security versus what it can do in the short term. You should give thought to the impact of financial decisions on your whole life, says Davis. Recognize that resources can change lives for the better. You should be thinking, what do I want life to look like later? Our next article is titled, Henry Winkler grapples with the Fonz and dyslexia in new memoir. This is by Mark Kennedy, who is an AP entertainment writer. Being Henry, the Fonz and Beyond, released by Celadon Books, is a breezy, inspirational story of one of Hollywood's most beloved figures who became an unlikely TV screen icon and later a champion for those with dyslexia. Winkler's 245-page book charts his course chronologically from the Fonz to Barry and the frustrating fallow periods in between, painting a portrait of a man trying to overcome a bitter, loveless childhood and a disability that made reading impossibly hard and simply trying to become a better man. I was in my mind always a little boy, he writes. My real self was like a kernel of corn sheathed in yards of concrete, as insulated as the nuclear material at Chernobyl. He describes himself at the Happy Days audition as a short Jew from New York City with a unibrow and hair down to my shoulders, confident about next to nothing in my life. He had graduated from Yale's drama school and bagged a few roles despite having difficulty reading. The Fonz almost never happened for him. The fearsome Barry Diller, then head of development for ABC, and future Disney CEO Michael Eisner were skeptical of Winkler getting the part. But writer-creator Gary Marshall saw something. Later, Winkler dishes, the immense popularity of the Fonz eclipsed anyone else on the show, and the network secretly approached him with the idea of spinning off a show or changing the name to Fonzie's Happy Days. Winkler refused. The end of Happy Days brought its own stress for a man who admits that worrying is my favorite indoor sports. He writes, I was terrified of being a flash in a pan, a one-hit wonder. Was I? Over the years, there were guest spots on shows like Arrested Development, Royal Pains, and Parks and Recreation until finally Barry, the show in 2018 that would prove a second tentpole to his career and produce his first primetime Emmy. In 2003, Winkler branched out into children's books with Lynn Oliver, writing about the adventures of Hank Zipser, a young boy with dyslexia who overcomes many learning challenges. The 28-book series, Hank Zipser, the World's Greatest Underachiever, was based on Winkler's own experience with undiagnosed dyslexia. At the height of my fame and success, I felt embarrassed, inadequate, he writes. The memoir is enlivened by an unusual move. Winkler includes long reaction passages from his wife, Stacy, who is pretty brutal about Winkler's immaturity, his parenting, his own parents, and a crippling fear of poverty. A very big thing I'd learned about Henry was that when he wasn't working, he was absolutely miserable, adrift, insecure, anxious, she writes. It's telling that Winkler, who writes he has lately benefited from therapy, includes a frank perspective from outside his own head. There are fun moments throughout. How Winkler came to produce MacGyver and how he got fired from directing Turner and Hooch. There's an hysterical section about trying to direct Burt Reynolds in Cops and One Half. And while Winkler is a nice guy, he's still capable of throwing some shade at Michael Keaton. He wonderfully captures the late Robin Williams. Within 42 seconds, I knew I was in the presence of greatness, and how CBS made Ron Howard so mad during Happy Days that he became a film director almost out of spite. But one figure looms over this book and career, the Fonz, whose moody expression fills the back cover. Winkler, by the end, has come to peace with his creation. For a long time after Happy Days, I was saddened that the world could only see me as the Fonz, he writes. But I never lost sight of what the character gave me. A roof over my head, food on the table, my children's education, and how much it gave me in terms of introducing me to the whole world. And then our next article is titled, Joan Baez Has Songs to Sing and Secrets to Tell in New Documentary, by Jocelyn Novick, AP National Writer. Bob Dylan called it her heart-stopping soprano, and it's true that when Joan Baez unleashed that pure angelic voice on the protest song, We Shall Overcome, you could believe we would indeed overcome. The celebrated folk singer and activist was singing about civil rights, of course. But what we learn in the thoughtful, thorough, and sometimes harrowingly intimate Joan Baez, I Am a Noise, is that Baez was also seeking to overcome much on a personal scale. Anxiety, depression, loneliness, and late in life, troubling repressed memories about her own father. If that sounds like a lot to cover in 113 minutes, it is, especially because the new documentary, directed by Maeve O'Boyle, Miri Navasky, and Karen O'Connor, also recaps a 60-year performing career with the singer telling her story through interviews and an incredible wealth of archival material. We see Baez entering for the very first time a storage unit filled to the ceiling by her late mother with photos, home films, and audio recordings, letters, drawings, and even tapes of therapy sessions. And she gave her directors the key. The film was originally intended simply to cover Baez's last 2018 Fare Thee Well tour. Baez decided to leave a more thorough legacy. The film begins with novelist Gabriel Garcia Marquez's quote about how everyone has three lives, public, private, and secret. Well, this is certainly apt for Baez, who emerged as a sudden star in 1959, an 18-year-old with a guitar and that bell-like voice, and went on to make some 40 albums with a 2017 induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. As we see from her own anguished drawings and letters beginning in youth, her intensely public life masked both a difficult private one and some dark secrets as well. And then there was Dylan, the same age as Baez, that inscrutable genius who stole her heart and then broke it. It was intoxicating being together, recounts Baez, who introduced him lovingly to her audiences, until a painful UK tour when his fame blossomed, and it was horrible. Then staring into the camera, she says, "Hi, Bob." It's a welcome and rare opportunity to laugh with her. But back to the beginning, where Baez, on the cusp of 80, is preparing for the tour, rehearsing at home in Northern California. Her hair is fully gray. Her face has not changed much. "I know I look good for my age, but there is a limit," she quips of upcoming retirement. As for her voice, it's there, but definitely lower and more ragged. Amid concert footage, we toggle to scenes of Baez's youth. We also hear, on and off, a strange and rather distracting male voice sounding like a hypnotist. It turns out to be her therapist. The story begins with lovely black and white footage of Joan as a child, dancing in a field with her parents and sisters. Her Mexican-born father was dashing. The scenes look idyllic, but there are signs of trouble ahead when, in an interview from the present, Joan notes mysteriously, "I'm way too conflicted to just have a bunch of happy memories." We see pages from young Joan's journal, its copious sketches brought to life by wonderfully inventive animation, and hear how white kids called her the dumb Mexican in school. Panic attacks and anxiety set in, even when she became a star, breaking out at the Newport Folk Festival in 1959, her self-image doesn't seem to thrive. Nestled among the many letters to her parents is a drawing of a very small girl. "This is how I felt on the Carnegie Hall stage." And then a charismatic singer-songwriter invades her life. "I was just stoned on that talent," she says of Dylan. One of the best moments of the film has Baez at the mic during Good Times, imitating Dylan, imitating her. But later on that tour to Britain, he leaves her in his wake. "Dylan broke my heart," she says. A new phase sees Baez deeply engaged in protests against the Vietnam War, even going to jail. Their young activist David Harris visits her. The two will marry, she'll become pregnant, and then he will go to jail. When he comes out, the marriage is troubled and doesn't last. "He was too young and I was too crazy," she says. Gabriel, her son, plays drums in his mother's band on the farewell tour. Joan Baez, I Am a Noise, a Magnolia Pictures release, is unrated by the Motion Picture Association. Running time, 113 minutes. 3 stars out of 4. And I think I have enough time to finish with Laughing Matters, Pennies and Seconds. A man was wandering in the woods, pondering all the mysteries of life on this holiday season and his own personal problems. The man couldn't find the answer, so he sought help from God. "God, you there, God?" he asked. "Yes, what is it, my son?" God answered. "Mind if I ask a few questions?" the man asked.
"Go ahead, my son. Anything."
"God, what is a million years to you?"
God answered, "A million years to me is only a second."
The man asked, "God, what is $1 million worth to you?"
God replies, $1 million is to me is worth only a penny."
The man lifted his eyebrows and asked his final question, "God, can I have a penny?"
God answered, "Sure, give me a second."
And then the very last thing, new daily word games to challenge your mind at seniorific.com. The seniorific.com online puzzles platform has some daily offerings for you that we want to share with you. The first is called Guessionary. It is a five-letter word game like others. Every puzzle has a theme and a hidden unlisted clue. Use the theme to deduce the unlisted clue and find it in the letter grid. The other new game is called Plus One, and it is very challenging. And that's it for today's Seniorific News. You have been listening to Seniorific News, December issue on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Patty Martin saying goodbye from Owl Radio.